Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Oral Sessions with me, Renee Paquette. Listen, this is the show where we don't fuck around. We get good guests, we have great conversations, and we hit the freaking pavement running. And that's exactly what happened in this week's episode, because I got the one, the only, the president of All Elite Wrestling, one of the best dudes, just such a sweet, genuine soul that just loves him some wrestling and made his own wrestling promotion. We've got Tony Khan on this week's episode. He was so great. I mean, I've not been able to see Tony in a little while because I've not been able to travel with John. The world's in shambles, as we all know. I'm pregnant, as we all know. So I've been firmly planted at home. So it was so cool to just get to sit down and shoot the shit with him for a little bit. But just finding out, you know, about the inception of AEW, kind of a reflection on AEW, looking back at the year that they've had on TV, their contract with TNT, the successes that they've had, what he wants to change, where he wants to grow, talent that he wants to develop. We talk about the competition in wrestling and how that is thriving, which is amazing for all fans of wrestling. Thank you to all wrestling promotions for that. And we also talk about what it is like being raised by a self-made billionaire. That's just something that I find fascinating. And Tony's really cool talking about it and talking about his relationship with his father and talking to his dad about wanting to start doing AEW. Of course, Tony Khan and his dad, you know, they have the Jacksonville Jaguars. They've got Fulham FC in the Premier League. So no strangers to the world of sports, but now dipping their toes into the world of professional wrestling. Anyways, this was a blast of an interview. I loved hanging out with Tony. I hope that you guys enjoy this conversation. And I just got to listen to me pick his brain for a little bit. Also, by the way, when we started recording this, I was like, oh, we'll go like an hour. We did like an hour. And I thanked him for his time because he's a very busy man. Then we ended up just talking for like another 45 minutes or so. So we ended up recording again a little bit. So you get the Frankenstein of that. But before we get to that interview, want to give a real quick shout out and a big thank you to this week's sponsor of Oral Sessions, which is Apostrophe. Apostrophe makes it easy to see board-certified dermatologists online. You get treated immediately and your medications are delivered to your home. You don't have to go anywhere. It's amazing. All you have to do is fill out Apostrophe's online questionnaire about your skin concerns and your medical history and then snap a few selfies and your dermatologist will get back to you with a customized treatment that's tailored just for you. It's very easy. Don't put a filter on these selfies, you guys. They need to see your skin straight up for what it is. Then also the best part about Apostrophe is that they offer topical and oral medication so you guys can treat your acne from the inside out and the outside in. We're getting it from all angles here. Apostrophe treats acne. They can also help you hit other skincare goals like reducing redness, wrinkles, and even dark spots, which let me tell you, that's been a bit of an issue with this child that is growing within me that these little dark spots are popping up. Bit of an ish, but we're working on it here with Apostrophe. It's amazing. So one of the things that I really love about Apostrophe as well, I mean, I just rattled off all these great things, but their packaging is great too. I love a good packaging situation. The unboxing experience, if you will. They come with really cute postcards and stickers so you can actually personalize your prescription bottle. Who doesn't want to do that? It's like going to school and being able to decorate your binder or your Duotang. Do you guys call it a Duotang in the US? We call it a Duotang in Canada. Anyways, the other great thing is that I just didn't even have to go to the pharmacy at all to pick up my medications during all this COVID craziness. It's so amazing. I could just have it all delivered right to my freaking door and you guys can do the exact same. So for you guys to get $15 off your first visit with a board certified dermatologist at apostrophe.com/Renee, you can use my code Renee. Now this code is only available to our listeners, very exclusive. So to get you guys started, just go to apostrophe.com/Renee and click begin visit. Then use the code Renee, R-E-N-E-E, at the sign up and you're going to get $15 off your dermatology visit. That's apostrophe.com/Renee. And that code Renee is going to get your dermatology visit for $15 off. So big thank you to Apostrophe for sponsoring this episode of Oral Sessions. All right, guys, without further ado, here is the man, the myth, the legend, the one, the only, the president of All Elite Wrestling, Tony Khan. Hi.
Hey, so good to see you.
It's amazing to see you. We even have our matching headphones. Very chic of us.
Yeah, we're like a tag team.
Oh my God. Could you imagine that? I don't think we'd do very well.
I don't think so either. I'm not a great athlete.
I mean, I could be somewhat athletic, but I get blown up walking up the stairs these days. So I'm out. I got nothing. So first things off the bat, while we've got you here, just to, you know, talk about it. Congratulations on what you guys put together for the Brody Lee tribute show. It was beautiful. You guys did just such an amazing job with that. It had such a human element to it and easily regarded as one of the best tribute shows that we've ever seen in wrestling. And obviously that was incredibly hard for everybody at AEW, but I think you guys all really rallied behind the Hubers and did such a beautiful job.
I thought it was the best effort the crew has ever put together. I'm so proud of everyone who worked on the show and everyone in the company and how they've handled the situation, because people knew for a long time John was sick. We told every wrestler. Amanda went out and had told people that John's not doing well and he needs your prayers and your thoughts, but also he needs you not to tell anybody this. And a lot of us were worried when she told the entire crew at once, but everybody kept the secret and supported them, and we did everything we could. And then, you know, when it came time, all the wrestlers wanted to do something really nice for him. And I knew the tributes were going to be genuine from the heart. Like, one of the greatest things you can say about Brody is that everybody immediately, when the news came out that Brody had passed away, the first things everybody said about him are, this is a great person who loved his family so much and he loved wrestling. Those themes just came out, and it wasn't an orchestrated, choreographed thing at all. That's just the John everyone knew.
No, it was very organic. Absolutely. I mean, anyone that he's met and that has had any kind of an interaction with Brody just knows like what an outstanding human being he was. So congratulations on everything you guys put together, and just, you know, during such a difficult time of having, you know, having a feel good moment that I think everybody really needed.
It was the worst thing I think we've ever been through, Renee. It was the worst. When we did the show, I had no idea what to do a couple days before the show. And Saturday, Brody passed. It was the day after Christmas. And talking to Amanda that night, and she decided to tell everybody, you know, for the first time that he'd been sick and that he'd passed. And it was a shock to a lot of people. It was a shock to some of his good friends even. And I felt like we had to do a tribute that would be right for him, but I didn't know what to do. I didn't sleep Saturday night. And the next day, the Jaguars had a game, and I went to the game very restless. And late in the game and at the end of the game, I went over to Amanda, who she'd come to the game with Brody. And I ended up spending a long time talking to Amanda and also a little bit of time talking to Brody. And I told her, I promise this is going to be the greatest tribute ever. I'd be lying if I said I know exactly what we're going to do. And I asked her how comfortable Lil Brody was about being involved. And she said, very comfortable being involved. I can't say enough about how much people did to support her in this time. People that work here, Mega, Margaret, our legal team have been supporting her personally as friends above and beyond. And then Cody and Vance, number 10 from the Dark Order, and I wanted to make it really special, but I came back from the game Sunday night. I still hadn't slept and I had to lay down for a little bit. And then I got up from this, kind of long nap, and I had all these missed calls and I hadn't slept in days and just kind of came out of a little bit of a, like maybe a 2 hour coma. And I had a missed call from Dave Meltzer, and I called Dave back, and, he asked me what we're going to do. And I told him, I honestly don't know. And this was like, at this point, I don't know, it's like 2-3 in the morning. And I put the pencil to paper after I got off the phone with Dave. And that's when I came up with the idea of the Dark Order represented in all the matches, teaming with baby faces in every match to make it clear that we're painting them in a brighter light, in a heroic light. And the story of the night would be, can the Dark Order get the clean sweep? Can they sweep all these matches? We knew that the tributes would be from the heart, and I knew that there'd be great videos, and I had gotten the rights to the song in advance, hoping that Brody was going to kick out But knowing that the doctor said it was not a high percentage chance, and I wanted to make sure that we weren't behind the eight ball as far as getting him the greatest tribute video possible. So I got the music right in advance. So then came up with this idea and how to work -1, -1, Lil Brody into the story and have him in there. But there were other things people came up with along the way that were great details.
That kid knows how to wheel a kendo stick, huh?
He's a very stiff shot. he's injured a lot of people here. But people had touches. I came in with this format and I was like, here's what I'd like everyone to do. And everyone was so great about it and wanted to put on the best tribute for him. And I said, if we can make this the greatest show ever, then his name will live forever. And right now on Cage Match, it's the number one rated wrestling show of all time, which I think is awesome because that was the goal. And everybody that went out and killed it, the matches were great, the tributes were great, the video was great. And the most important part of all was that Amanda and Brody and someday Nolan will be able to see this too. And, you know, because he's too young to really understand everything that's going on right now. Thanks for asking about it. It's been really hard, but I should add, like, people came up that day with like a lot of touches that helped make the show more special. Like Lance Archer went out and he said he wanted to get,
that was amazing.
That was his idea.
Yeah. And having Eric Rowan there as well was,
that was Spears' idea. That was Spears' idea.
Was it?
It was like the day before he asked if I wanted to use Eric Redbeard.
Yeah.
And I said, I would like to use Eric Redbeard. That's a great idea. I would probably have him come out in the middle of the show and do this thing with, you know, the Dark Order and Hangman there in that spot in the middle of the show, and then have Amanda and Brody at the end. And that's why we did it that way.
Just the other takeaway that I have from the whole thing is my communication with Amanda during everything. And the main thing she kept reiterating to me was just how amazing AEW was to her throughout everything. You guys really made her feel as safe and secure, I think, as somebody could during such a difficult time. So kudos to you. Kudos to everybody at AEW. And now -1, he's going to be a future roster member, huh? What went into putting that contract together and deciding, like, let's put this down on pen and paper here for little Brody Jr.?
Mega has been so supportive of him. And like I said, Cody had spent a lot of time with him and different people on the roster really enjoyed him. And he loves being around. He loves wrestling so much. And we're just trying to give him great stuff to help him develop his wrestling mind and frankly, to occupy his wrestling mind in a really difficult time.
Yeah.
His birthday is this weekend and we're going to have him there live to celebrate the birthday of -1. And Amanda is very excited about it. You know, I've always tried to make sure anything he does, Amanda's excited and wants to do. So if -1 gets his homework done in the next week, he will be there live on Wednesday night.
There's rules, kid.
There's rules. In AEW and in life, there are rules.
Exactly.
I would be remiss if I didn't say this story too, that while we're talking about him, that one of the last moments he had of being aware of something was when he found out you were pregnant.
I know.
And I was told he was very, very happy for you and John. And I don't think he had a lot of good days after that, but that was a good day for him.
That was something, you know, when we were coming out and letting everybody know, or John dropping the bomb on Dynamite, just kind of, you know, navigating all that. But after talking to Amanda and she told me that, I mean, that just, it made me feel so good to know that, you know, for him to be able to receive a bit of information that made him happy and to put a big smile on his face while going through everything he was going through. I mean, that's, I don't even, you know, how do you react to something like that? I mean, it's so special. And so just to have that connection with Brody through that is really cool.
He's a special person and he loved family and he valued family above all, which is why we wanted to tell everybody that about him. And I think now the whole world knows that about him and what a great family he has. So that's special too. And then to be able to declare Brody Lee the TNT champion for life, I think is pretty awesome. And really, you know, he's not alone. We're so many of us. We're all so happy for you, Renee. I mean, we're all really excited.
Thank you. If I get out of breath during this interview, that's why. I'm like, oh, my body's just like going through all these insane changes, but it is really, really cool. It's funny watching John react to everything. We just came back from doing an ultrasound and it was the first time he actually got to be in the room for the ultrasound. He was like, oh my God, I can just see his brain like getting rattled, like checking it all out. And see, apparently our baby has gigantic long legs. So that'll be after him, not me. Okay. So here we are like a year into AEW. You've done it. What a successful year for you. What is like your reflections upon, I mean, you're over a year now, but just kind of looking back at the success that you guys have been able to have in this first year, what's your kind of take on it all?
I'm very proud of the success we've had. I'm not surprised. And I think we're going to have a great 2021. We've learned a lot and we've had great progress, great growth. And one of the biggest moments for us was when John came in, and that was at the very beginning on our first show, at the end of our first show. And things have been so great since then. And I'm just really excited. Hopefully we'll be able to get fans back in full capacity sometime soon. But what we've been doing, I think, has also been great. And it's been the best thing in wrestling, in my opinion. Really, we made Jacksonville the only place in America where you can safely go to a show. And I think from what I've seen, we've had great experiences with fans. Everybody reaches out to say how they felt very safe, how if they, you know, their family or friend group in their pod, nobody bothered them. And we try to keep people there, not mingling around with other people. And they're everybody's spaced out. And the idea came from the drive-in movies.
Oh, cool. Yeah. No honking, though. Thank God.
Yeah. And it's a little, but then, you know, that way I don't have to, I can't actually park cars up in the seating bowl.
Yeah.
So rather than parking cars, you just kind of space everyone out, but it's the same idea. And when drive-in movies kind of made a comeback, everyone was trying to find creative ways to market their products, and movies were no exception. And I stole the idea from the Tonight Show of having the wrestlers around the ringside. And then I stole the idea from drive-in movies of spacing people out. And a lot of football teams and different people are trying it now, but we were really the first ones to kind of develop the plan. And I know for the NFL and specifically for the Jaguars, they paid really close attention to what we did.
I think for everybody, I mean, just the way that wrestling in general has handled the lack of audience. I mean, having like a cardboard cutouts has been weird, or like, you know, trying to find different ways to navigate around it. But I feel like wrestling in general has really been like a front runner in figuring out how to work through this. It's been really impressive to see.
A lot of wrestling is about innovative and being problem solving, you know, at work. And I think that this has presented problems. It's been very challenging, but like I said, wrestling's about problem solving. So
absolutely. I mean, you think of how often plans change or you've got to change things on the fly. It's like, if anybody can navigate those waters, it's wrestling 100%. You know, you look back at what the year was and what a bunch of crazy situations to have your first year of a show really getting off the ground and a company getting off the ground. What are some of the things that you look back at as learning lessons or things that you want to change moving into year two?
I'm really excited about adding a third hour of television.
Hell yeah.
And I think that's going to be the most important thing for us, because right now we've accumulated so much talent and so much depth on the roster and being able to showcase all of our great wrestlers.
When you say a third hour added on, this is not a third hour added on to Dynamite. This will be something separate from that?
Yes, it will not be a third hour of Dynamite, and it will not be on Wednesday, but it will be a third hour with Warner Media. It'll be a third TV hour, and it's great exposure for us. We've got Dark, which has been a great platform for our wrestlers on YouTube. And I think there are other streaming options and other shows we could do with YouTube or other streaming platforms. So there's going to be more opportunities. There's going to be more real estate for our wrestlers, but without oversaturating. I definitely don't want to do 3 hours of Dynamite. And I feel really strongly about keeping our big four pay-per-views, the core big four. We may develop other shows. We've done other streaming specials and things and big episodes of Dynamite. But I think just expanding our calendar will be a big thing in 2021. As far as lessons I learned, the biggest lesson I learned was in 2019. And in 2020, the year's over now. And I think I did a much better job of this in 2020. And I felt like it helped the company rebound through a really difficult time. And that is being personally accountable. I have to be a better filter of ideas. To be honest, the stuff I liked the least in 2019 was stuff that I had low expectations for.
Oh.
Stuff that I almost scratched. And there were things that I didn't like. And by the beginning of 2020, I had pretty much gotten to the point where it was, I should trust my instincts more. And I really need to be responsible and stand up if I don't like an idea and say, like, no, you're not going to do that. I think this year we're much more organized. And I tried to get more organized and do a better job in 2020. And I think the shows were more logical and better. And it paid off because we had a really challenging environment in the pandemic, but we've been able to maintain our audience better than any other wrestling show in America. And if you look at the stats from the beginning of 2020 to the end, Dynamite retained the audience better than anybody. It was a really challenging year to do that. Even before the COVID pandemic, there were external challenges with cord cutting and a lot of the viewership moving away from cable. So to stay so strong in our viewership and actually build up and have some of our best audiences by the end of 2020 is pretty great. And I was on the phone with TNT today on a conference call, and they were actually telling us how great we're doing.
Hell yeah.
John is a huge part of that. And having John back this week really was great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, he knows what he's doing once he gets out there.
Pretty great.
He knows.
He's pretty great. he's like, he's the best. And honestly, you know, I missed him when he wasn't here for a few weeks, and we missed him as a company. But I think for everybody involved, and John in particular, having the fans back has been really good. And there have been moments with our crowd, which is sellout now for us, is 20%, is close to 1,100. It's like 1,080 is a full house for us now. If we open up the top balcony, if not, then we do about 750. Basically, we've got a pretty loyal base of fans coming in, and it's almost like a territory, which is pretty cool. But it, like a worldwide televised, internationally televised territory, which is like kind of something I always wanted to do, and I never thought this would be that, but it's pretty great. And the fans that are here have like supported it. But John is one of the people who talks the most to me about how important the live crowds are and how psychologically, which I think we could talk today specifically. Oh, you and I could talk for hours about it, about John's psychology and how I think he's so cerebral and one of the most smartest people I know.
When I just watch him at home, the way he dissects things, or like when he gets in his like zone, I'm like, I have to give him his space during that. Like, he's in working mode. His brain just works on a different level that I find fascinating. It's really cool the way he looks at things and analyzes things. And it's really interesting, especially now. I mean, from what he's been able to do and achieve with you guys over whatever it's been, a year and a half, however long it's been that he's been with AEW, and for you to allow that space for people to grow and develop, I think is really amazing.
I love collaborating with people, but there's nobody I love collaborating with more than him. He's my favorite person to work with. He's like, he has the best ideas. And you know about our three-way calls, and I love doing our three-way calls with, and one of, I was telling Amanda this story because we did with Brody, because of the pandemic, you can't do all the face-to-face meetings you would have done in the past. So we planned so much stuff with Brody on a three-way call. Like John and I talked for probably 45 minutes, and then we patched Brody in and we talked for another 45 minutes. It's a great process. And I love talking wrestling with John. I love talking ideas with John, but I learn so much every time I talk to him. Not always just about wrestling either. He knows so much about so many different things.
Yeah, me too. I'm like that all the time. I'm like, damn, he's far more insightful than I can be. I'm so knee-jerk reaction. I'm like so high energy, and he really processes things differently than me. His pace on life, I find interesting.
You can edit this out if you don't want to use it, but I've read some of the book he's writing.
Oh,
awesome. It's awesome.
Really cool, right?
I love it.
So it's funny because he's working off of my laptop. So my email's set up on there. So anytime he sends it off to himself, it's sent through my sent email. So he's like, check it and read it. And reading all this stuff that he's been writing, I had no doubt. I've been up his ass forever. I'm like, dude, you need to write a book, because he can be a very eloquent speaker. And his memory, as I'm thinking of the word, what's the word? His memory is so amazing. The stuff that he's able to draw from. But the fact that he's actually doing that now and writing it himself, I think it's going to be such a badass product. I can't wait.
I'm so excited about it. It's so cool. And the best part of reading it has been that, like, you can so tell he's writing it himself, because it's like literally like reading him talking, which is the best. It's like a transcript of him talking. But it's really interesting. And
it's very cool.
I'm very excited about it. So yeah, if he doesn't want us to use it, we'll just cut this. But otherwise,
I'll check with him. But it is very cool.
I love it.
Proud of him. So in the absence, so, you know, like you just said, John's been home. He was off TV after he lost the title to Kenny Omega. He's home for a few weeks. How important is it for you in those weeks of having somebody of his caliber off of TV to really let some other stars build and step into that spotlight?
It's really important. And we tried to do that and showcase people. And also there was a good story reason why he was off. So even when he's gone, he's still featured. Look at other times too, when people have been off either for storyline reasons or for personal reasons or both. And in this case, it was good for both. I think it was a great time for John to be with you, but it was also good for the story, you know, made sense. And it's hard when you don't have one of your top stars in your entire portfolio of your roster there. But I do think, you know, we tried to cover it by featuring a lot of the other top stars that we have. And it's great. It's the best of both worlds when you can advance a story where we did a great rating this past week where we were up and the peak of the show, there were two peaks where John came back against Kenny in the middle of the show. And then for the main event with Darby and Brian Cage, which is what we wanted. Those are the two big stories we've been building. And I think to get John back out there and the story with John and Kenny is far from over. And
damn that Omega.
I didn't see a thing, by the way.
I saw your tweet about that. Saw nothing.
I missed that. But I'm so happy he's back, and you can't say enough about what he brings to our show. But it was great to feature the other wrestlers while he was out, and we were able to build up Darby versus Brian Cage and done a lot of really exciting stuff. We're building Top Flight up. They're going to be a great team for us, building the Acclaimed and a lot of young tag teams. Private Party with Matt Hardy.
Love Private Party. Those guys are amazing. They're special. They've got something cool going on, definitely.
They might have signed with the wrong manager, though. I don't know. Matt,
maybe.
Something about Matt seems pretty fishy lately.
There's something always fishy about Matt.
Yeah, I love Matt.
Always. Who else in the roster, though? I mean, you guys have the depth of your guys' roster is continually growing and developing. Who else are you kind of looking at, you know, say in the next 5 to 10 years, who you kind of see AEW or just like wrestling in general kind of being on the shoulders of?
I still think John's going to be a huge part of it, even though John's a huge part of it now. And MJF, the biggest program MJF's ever been in, was with John, and it's one of the biggest programs of the year. And if you look at as far as moving business, you could argue it was one of the most important things in all of wrestling this year because it did really strong business for us. And at a time when, you know, we were missing people. What's great for us right now is like 5-10 years, a lot of the people who are on top are still going to be on top in 5-10 years because our top people are not, for the most part, you know, of the most advanced age. We have a lot of top people in their early to mid 30s. And those people I still think are going to be on top in 5 years. I also think there's a good chance we've seen major advancement from, like I said, MJF is very young, but he's already one of the top wrestlers.
Yeah. In AEW. How old is he? Like 23, 24?
I think Max is 24, 25.
Yeah. Okay.
And Jungle Boy, Darby Allin is very young. Sammy Guevara.
Love Darby. Darby's amazing.
And in a decade, I think these are going to be really important people in wrestling. And there's a lot more, young stars, Ricky Starks and Brian Cage and Team Taz have done a great job. And a lot of the young tag teams we just talked about, right? Private Party, Top Flight. These guys are so young.
Even in the women's division, I got to say, I mean, watching Tay in her matchup with Serena Deeb, seeing the growth and development in her has been incredible. I also think Anna Jay is somebody that you can just see these leaps and bounds of somebody that is developing or already has that star quality and just honing those skills in. It's really cool to watch.
I completely agree. We have some really good young stars. It's amazing how far Anna Jay's come, given her experience. I mean, as a true rookie in the wrestling
business. Yeah.
And Ty Conti made great strides. Britt Baker is a star.
Oh my God. She's the best.
She's so great. I love Britt.
I mean, talk about just like getting those like characters in there too. I mean, that's so important. And I just think she's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Britt's a three-dimensional wrestler. She can do everything. And have got great people across the women's roster and really young talent. Like we're talking about, Penelope Ford's excellent. Thunder Rosa has come in and been really, really impactful. I really think, even though Thunder Rosa is not a full-time AEW wrestler, she's here often and she's been great when she's here and she's added a lot also.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So now just looking at the competition in wrestling, how important do you think it is for wrestling to be where it is right now and us actually to be having legit competition to having everything kind of be thriving the way that it is right now?
I think it's great. I think before the pandemic, which has obviously changed the way wrestling is presented, you know, you would have said a year ago or 10, 11 months ago that what a great time it is to be a wrestling fan. I still think you'd feel that way, but there's nothing anybody can do to control the pandemic or stop COVID. But I do think, you know, certainly when their arenas are full, this competition has been very, very good and it's been a great time for wrestling. I can only imagine how frustrated wrestling fans would have been through this if there had not been an AEW, frankly. you know, I think it's been the best show through the pandemic, and I'm very biased. I've seen other good shows, and I'm not saying it's the only good show, but I think it's been consistently the best show. And I've seen other people do great stuff, and I think we all push each other. And likewise, I think the competition's good for us too. And mostly I think it's good for the fans. And certainly right before the pandemic, when John won the title, I was saying I thought this was the best time to be a wrestling fan.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were feeling that way. Absolutely. You could feel that sort of surge of a new energy of like, oh, there's some new stuff going on. Some new life has been breathed into things. There's other opportunities, regardless of what somebody wants to watch or perform in. It's nice to just have those options. But is that something, do you pay attention to watching Raw or SmackDown or NXT as far as like your creative process goes and all that?
Not as far as the creative process goes so much, although it is, you don't want to be doing the exact same stuff. So I do think it's important to make sure, you know, you're not doing the exact same stuff somebody's already doing. But I also just like watching wrestling, and I watch a lot of shows. I watch those shows, but I watch other shows too. And I watch New Japan, and I'll watch the big AAA shows, like Triple Mania was great. Kenny Omega's match was excellent. If you haven't seen it, Kenny Omega versus Laredo Kid, I watched it on Twitch. It was great. And there's been great wrestling all over the world. And I think I watch Wrestle Kingdom. I try to keep up on their shows. And I think there was some great stuff on Wrestle Kingdom. There have been other shows in New Japan this year that I liked. There are other shows I didn't like from other companies, and them included. But I think for the most part, everybody's, like you said, in wrestling has done their best to try and keep the fans entertained and also keep everybody working. And that's something I take a lot of pride in, is that we've maintained our staff and the integrity of our staff. We've actually grown as a company through the pandemic, because I'm, you know, have actually more people than we started with.
Everybody jump on board. Okay. So now the deal with Impact, how did this come about? What was the decision going into, like, all right, we're going to work together with Impact. We've got the Good Brothers running in.
This is Kenny's idea. He asked me about it, and I love good ideas, and I don't do every idea. I try not to do the bad ones. And like I said, that's been something I try to do a better job of. And also, I don't do every good one. Sometimes because I don't realize they're good, because I'm not perfect. I make a lot of mistakes too. And I think that sometimes there are also good ones that just don't fit. Like, that's a great idea. You can't do it because that person's already doing this. Or I can't do it because we have another plan that we're locked into. This was something Kenny brought up that I thought was a great idea. And he put a lot of time and thought into it. And I give 100% of the credit to Kenny. And Don Callis and Kenny have a really close relationship. And, you know, I think that is what was behind it. But I also think Kenny believed Don would be a very powerful advocate for him and could fill the role of a really, really strong heel manager for Kenny as a top heel in the territory. And I think the top heel in wrestling right now. And I think that's something people wanted to see. There are some wrestlers, like, say, like Steve Austin in 2001, where I don't think people were ready to boo him, or that they wanted to see that person be a villain. But I absolutely think people were ready to see this Kenny Omega. And he was excited to present it, but he didn't just want to present the same Kenny Omega people had seen. He put so much thought into innovating, into changing. And it's why I always say, I think the two best wrestlers in the world are Kenny and John, are the two. And that's why we, you know, have showcased them as the top two. And that I think this is the Kenny people were ready to see, but we didn't just want to flip a switch. It's been a slow progression over the course of a year. And if you look at the story with Kenny and Hangman and how it built, and then the Eliminator tournament to fight John and how it built. And then at the end of John versus Eddie, when Kenny walked out and it's like, hey, here we are, winter is coming. And I think Kenny is the person that I would give the credit for that idea to. And then I went with Kenny to the taping, and they've got their pay-per-view this weekend. And it was something he believed in. He wanted to help Don, but he also thought it could help us. And he was right. And I wanted to support the idea. So I've green-lighted it. I said, we'll do this. We will partner with them, and I'll come with you. And I went up with him. And while I was there, Tony Schiavone doesn't live far away. He's a couple hours away. He said, I'll come hang out with you. And Tony and I were up there, and I had the idea, why don't we buy ads on Impact and do promos?
So funny.
And Thank you. I'm glad. Well, people seem to like them, and that's why we've been doing them and kept doing them. And it's great. It promotes our show, and it also keeps the storyline with them going. And I think that when we first did it, I didn't know that people would enjoy them as much as they have, and I didn't plan to keep doing them for as long as we have, but they've gotten a really great reaction, and it's good, like I said, for both companies, I think. And so I just had the idea when we were up there, and it was funny because I didn't bring a change of clothes. So I told Tony.
You didn't bring your boots. You always bring your boots, Tony. Shit.
But yeah, I didn't bring another, like I only had the shirt I was wearing, and we were going to tape a few of these in Nashville. And I said, Tone, I think we might need clothes. So while I was with Kenny and Don, and they were putting their stuff together, and I was just trying to keep track of everything going on and there to support Kenny and also to make sure nothing too crazy was going on, that Tony went and actually bought like a change of shirts for us. So it was great. Yeah, he picked up a black Ralph Lauren polo shirt for me, which if you see that shirt, like Tony bought that at the store along with the other shirt he's wearing in the second one, the second promo. So it was just a fun thing. It was great of him to do that. I was like, Tony, we're going to look pretty low budget here. We're in the same shirt every week.
Yeah, we can't have that. I mean, appearance is everything. Come on. So this brings me to my next question. When are we going to get to see Tony Khan as a regular on-air personality? Is that something you ever want to do?
No, it's not. And I've come as close to doing it as I will. I made a big exception coming out, and I thought it was the right thing to do to be there on behalf of the company to express for everybody how much Brody meant to us. And I wanted to pay the highest respect to him that I could, and to his family, and to Amanda and Brody, and be there for them. But other than that, I've never come out and done that in that role. Occasionally, because of the story with Impact, there'll be times where I think it makes sense. Like Matt and Nick were this past week, for example, they were waiting to be introduced by Don. Instead, Don brought out Anderson and Gallows, the Good Brothers. So Matt and Nick were standing there. Where would they watch this? Well, they were standing right by the curtain. They would go to Gorilla, and they would stand there with me, and I'm not going to be thrilled about it either. I'm not surprised. Because I knew what he was, if that makes sense. Like, that's why I looked at him and said, are you surprised? They should have expected this from Kenny by now. But I don't want to do that. And we have a limited amount of TV time, and we have a great roster, and there's a lot of other people that can be featured. And frankly, the character of the general manager doesn't need to be featured on TV a lot. You don't see I am the general manager of a Premier League team. You don't see me on NBC very much. Like, because, you know, that's not the job of the general manager, is not to be on TV a lot. And there are times, and there's a time and a place when, you know, if there's a statement that needs to be made or you got to say something, that you do. And in the case of AEW, it's announcing matches. In the case of Fulham, it could be announcing players or announcing somebody's coming in on loan or, you know, once every few years saying, guys, you need to do a better job. But for me, the role of the general manager, there's not really a need for that person to be on TV consistently. I think you just have to explain, hey, the general manager's made this match. The general manager's made this match. And it's a device that you need. So I think of myself more as a device than a character on the show.
Yeah, no, I think that makes perfect sense. And it's really interesting. I mean, just looking, I mean, you're bringing it up with Fulham and, you know, with the Jaguars, everything that you guys juggle in general, I mean, for your family, how'd that conversation go down when you're like, I want to start a wrestling promotion?
Not well. It didn't go well. You know, he did not support this at all. And I put the business plan together, and then I was pretty much ready to commit to it. And again, he was very cold feet, and we had some very uncomfortable, loud conversations where I told him this was going to be great. And he's been so cool about it, my dad. He's the smartest person I've ever known. He knew nothing about wrestling, and now all of a sudden, because he's the smartest business person, now that he's paying attention to wrestling, he's learning a lot, and he makes really observant points sometimes, even though it's not his thing. He loved AEW. AEW is his thing, but he was never a wrestling fan before AEW. I have a lot of people close to me that are like that are intellectuals, like the highest IQ people I know that kind of look down on wrestling. Now they watch AEW and they see it and they're like, wow, I never watched wrestling before. But to be fair, I told them, if you tried watching wrestling 5 years ago, you probably wouldn't have liked what you were watching. And I try not to insult the audience's intelligence You know, I know we don't do perfect, but I, you know, try to maintain sense of logic and not do ridiculous stuff all the time, even though sometimes
I think people can really get a different respect for wrestling, though, because I think wrestling has always sort of been, you know, kind of regarded as like that black sheep of entertainment or whatever. People snub their nose up at it. But once you really start to understand the psychology that goes behind it, the athletics behind it, it's impossible to not develop a respect for what the companies are doing, what the talent is doing. So it's really cool when you can see new people jump on board and become fans, and they start asking questions, and eventually they start talking carny. It's one thing after another.
That's the crazy thing, is how quickly people learn it, and they start reading, you know, forums online, they go on Reddit, they go on Twitter, and they learn a lot. But my best friend is a Harvard math major. He's got a degree from Harvard in math, and he's a genius. He's one of the smartest people I know. And same as my dad, he paid no attention to wrestling. And I would always try to get these people to watch wrestling. Now this is not an expression you would want to use during COVID, but I tried to spread the love of wrestling like fire. Anybody who was around me, I would try to infect them with loving wrestling. And some people, I made a lot of fans in my lifetime in school, especially, you know, and they wouldn't watch wrestling when I wasn't around as much. Some of them became like lifelong fans, but there were other people that would like, they would watch it with me and they kind of knew what was going on, but I would try and bring people into it. And my father was never someone I succeeded on.
What is your go-to match when you're telling someone to get into it? You're like, hey, just go watch this and then come back and talk to me. What's like your quick knee-jerk reaction to that?
It's changed a lot over time. When I was really young, it might have been like Steamboat versus Savage from WrestleMania 3, or it might have been Bret Hart versus Mr. Perfect from King of the Ring 93. Then I got Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat matches, and I would have said those, Flair and Steamboat. The Chi-Town Rumble was a tape I had when I was young, before I'd even seen the Music City Showdown in Nashville or the New Orleans Clash. Then later, I might have said the John Cena-Brock Lesnar match where they beat the hell out of each other.
Oh, wow.
Not the short one. Not the short beating. I'm talking about Brock's first match back, Extreme Rules 2012, where he absolutely just beat the shit out of John.
Those are some big, meaty men beating the hell out of each other.
That was something. And it wasn't for everybody, but it was a lot safer than the match he had with Randy at SummerSlam, I thought. And it was also still the idea I thought they were trying to create, that it was like a dangerous situation. And then I would have said a lot of matches that involved the Young Bucks and the Golden Lovers. I got really into around 2013-14. I'd seen the Golden Lovers, and I really liked the Young Bucks a lot. And I thought that, hey, these guys are going to be like the next Hardy Boys in 2009-2010. That's what I thought, and I think a lot of wrestling fans felt that way. They've come to transcend tag team wrestling, and they're so important. And for our division, so many of the teams that are here and the emphasis we put on it, so much of it comes down to the Young Bucks and their belief in it and how great they are as tag team wrestlers. And their minds for tag team wrestling is so great.
I've got a Golden Lovers shirt upstairs I keep forgetting to take out. I couldn't technically wear it for a very long time, so I think I got to bust that thing out.
That's great. I love the Golden Lovers, and I love the, you know, that stuff is great. And the G1 of that time were great. So before AEW, these are some things I might have pointed out. And now if people ask me to point to matches, I would point to Revolution. I would say, watch that show bell to bell. I think it's the best wrestling pay-per-view I've ever seen. You can't top a show with a better closing moment or a more satisfying conclusion than John winning the title, the eye patch thing being a bit of playing possum, the speech he gave at the end to the Chicago crowd, which is the perfect place for us to do it because Chicago has been so important in the development of AEW. Start to finish, I think Young Bucks versus Kenny and Hangman is one of the greatest matches and the culmination of that part of the story, but a story that kept going. And really just the end of that chapter, not the end of the story. I think Cody and MJF also, that was the culmination of a great story and something we haven't gone back to, that someday I think we will maybe see those guys cross paths again. But Cody and MJF was a great match that ended a really, really, really important story for us. Orange Cassidy and Pac.
Oh my God, that was fantastic.
I had that one up my sleeve for several months and nobody knew Orange Cassidy and Pac were working the pay-per-view. And then people would ask me like a month, like, well, what's Pac doing at the pay-per-view?
How's that going to work? Yeah.
Well, I was like, yeah, it's going to be Orange Cassidy versus Pac. And like, wait, what? And because the build was very subtle because they had done stuff there had been like Pac versus Trent. There had been a 6-man tag before I had this death triangle thing I'd conceived with Pac and the Lucha Brothers. I'd had Pac just with TH2, Jack and Angelico. So there would be partners against best friends, Orange Cassidy. So they'd like had some matches. I was going to be able to build good video packages and tell some backstory. But really the key thing was when Pac was at his most angry moment after the Iron Man match with Kenny is the perfect time for Orange Cassidy to come out there. And I was in catering in Kansas City with Orange Cassidy and the best friends and Tony Schiavone before their interviews that they would do later in the show. And I was telling him that after Chuck said this line that I wanted to say, you know, that Orange Cassidy is going to try at Revolution. I was promising the guys, this crowd is going to chant. He's going to try. He's going to try. He's going to try. And they did. And that's, I love that match. And it was really fun working on that. And Darby and Sammy, another story that is a satisfying conclusion. I mentioned Savage and Steamboat earlier, and I'd be lying if I said that Darby getting his throat smashed with a skateboard wasn't inspired by that.
Yeah.
And there's so much great stuff on that show, but those are some of the great things. And that's my favorite wrestling pay-per-view. So now I would probably point someone to Revolution, maybe give them the countdown to Revolution so they get all the stories in and understand what was going on with John and the Inner Circle, how, you know, he'd rejected their offer and the car, stolen the car, and they took his eye out. And then
I still get asked to this day if we still own that car.
That's my dad's car.
I know.
Yeah. John's driven it a number of times now, though. He's done some donuts in it, and hopefully dad's not listening to your show.
I know, right? Hey. Hi, Dad. Okay, so you mentioned your dad and him now jumping on board. He's figuring out the wrestling world. What is it like being raised by a self-made billionaire? Like, what is that pressure like? Was he always in business mode? Like, I'm fascinated by this.
It's really, really hard. He's really nice person. He's very supportive and he's a very loving man. He's also a very, very hard man. He's not going to give it to you easy. He's not going to tell you you've pulled something off or done a good job on something unless he really, really means it. And I don't hear it from him very often, but I've heard it from him a lot on AEW. And he's also been really great to say in public that he was very wrong about AEW and even went to Forbes and multiple big publications and has said in print that it's a good lesson in parenting that sometimes you have to trust your kids. And in this case, I had put a business plan together and we all know like these, I think it's a lot of wrestling fans probably listening to your show. Maybe some who aren't, but, and then maybe we'll make them fans. But I do think, you know, I hope, but then you would think after, you know, all this time that after Dynamite has had a lot of good results, that it would get old hearing good job from him. But now hearing it most weeks, almost every week, is pretty nice. He watches the show. He likes the show. And he's really proud of AEW, and that makes me really proud. You know, I haven't heard it a lot. To be fair, it's hard to get the praise from him, but it's worth it when you get it. And he's a really, really great person. He's very, very loving and sweet, but he's not going to sugarcoat things or tell you you've done something really special if you haven't.
I respect that.
I think there's something to it where he's like a self-made, hard-driven man who's so intelligent, and sometimes he's really hard to get a read on. And he's very caring, but he doesn't always show it, but he's really nice. And it doesn't always seem that way to people. And people are really intimidated by him. And you really have to earn his respect. Praise does not come from him lightly. Everything I just said applies to both Dad and to John.
So our kid's in for a doozy.
I mean, professionally, I don't know what it's like living with John, but professionally, like a compliment from John is the highest compliment you can get in wrestling. Like he doesn't throw praise around lightly. And he's not one for the gooey stuff, but I do think that when you get,
give him a few cocktails, then he is
maybe a little more with a couple of, but you know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It is a good comparison of a self-made man who's accomplished so much and become world famous and done it all on his own. And I think there are good comparisons there. So actually, two of the people that aren't always going to languish praise on you, but when I get it, I'm really proud of it, are Dad and John. And so maybe if that, I'm just giving that as a comparison so that you understand, because I love my dad so much and I love John so much and I actually see a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
So
no, I just find that like interesting just to imagine what that would like being like growing up in a household like that. And you went to the same school as your dad too, right?
Yeah.
That was just like an active decision just to like follow in the footsteps.
I grew up there. It was like, it was a huge part of my life. My parents had gone to school there. They met there. My dad started his business in Champaign. And I don't know if you have been through Champaign because they never did TV there, but there were house shows there.
And I'm sure I've driven through Champaign. Yeah.
There's a lot of, it was like a house show town. So it's a college town and I grew up there and I actually went to a high school on the campus of the college I went to where my parents went to school. And I'd grown up there and I go into the Illinois games. To me, my childhood was wrestling and Illinois football and Illinois basketball. And so I grew up around, wrestling in the Big Ten. Funnily enough, I never got that interested in amateur wrestling, even though the Big Ten is the best league for amateur wrestling. And it was like literally 5 minutes from my house, and people would tell me, there's real wrestling. Go see the real wrestling. Don't watch the stuff you watch on TV in like the early 90s when I was a kid and always trying to take me to see collegiate wrestling. I just couldn't get into it, even though it's a great sport. And I was so focused on, like I said, wrestling and Illinois football and basketball. So it was an easy choice for me. I only applied to one college. I had gone to University of Illinois Laboratory High School. And it's like half the kids in my high school class, because I went to it's a public school, but it's academic merit-based. So you had to test and to get in and they checked your grades and your references. But it's a public school. There's no tuition. And I went to the University of Illinois Laboratory High School and went there from eighth grade to 12th grade. And I'd also gone to the university's preschool and kindergarten program for advanced students.
Whoa. Oh my gosh. You never left the campus.
I almost never did leave the campus. Other than first grade to seventh grade, I was there for an amazing amount of time, preschool, wow, kindergarten, and then 8 to 12, and then for college, which was, I did a couple extra years of college too, because I changed majors.
What did you major in?
I started in College of Engineering and then I had mono and I got a little behind and I tried to catch up and I didn't get totally caught up. And then I tried to press ahead and I was like, to be honest, I spent a lot of time watching wrestling and writing Dynamite, which sounds absurd. But I spent a lot of time watching wrestling and writing Dynamite. And they were on different nights of the week. But the great thing about Dynamite is it rhymes with any night.
True. So good point.
It's been on Wednesdays. It's been on Saturdays. But, Dynamite, I've been writing it for about 26 years.
Wow.
Since I was like 12 years old. And so I would, late at night. But I also like went out a lot. I mean, you know me pretty well. We're good friends.
Yeah.
And, I'll go out and have a drink and have fun.
Hell yeah.
Nevertheless, I grew up on that campus and that may have inspired them, but I that's why it was an easy choice for me to go to school at Illinois.
Did your parents meet on that campus too?
Yeah, at a bar.
Oh, hell yeah. So what, they've been together for how many years now?
50 years.
Wow.
Like a little over 50.
Good for them. Is that something that you like aspire to, seeing your parents be together for so long and everything they've been able to build together? That's pretty fantastic.
It is amazing what they built together and it's amazing what they've done professionally. And I think I believe they've raised a great family. I love my sister very much and she and her husband are very happy and I'm trying to do the best for the family I can. I definitely think that's very inspirational. And my mom doesn't get talked about as much, but she loves AEW too. And I wouldn't have been able to go to the video stores and rent all those wrestling tapes and all those WCW shows and Coliseum videos if it weren't for my mom taking me and having a lot of patience. My parents have inspired me a lot. Absolutely. Even though they didn't really watch wrestling before AEW, it wouldn't have been possible for me to order pay-per-views. Even though, people would think I was able, Tony Khan probably ordered like every wrestling pay-per-view as a kid. I did not. They did not. I watch a lot of, my parents are hard people. I watch a lot of wrestling pay-per-views through the Scramble.
This is a weird question, but with us having a baby on the way, John's very much of the mindset of like, our kids needs to think that we're poor. I want them to think that we don't really have anything so that they have to work harder. They don't just get everything. Was it like that?
Yeah, at first. I had no idea until older people told me that my family had money. Seriously, I didn't know there was
really?
Any difference. Yeah, they didn't tell me.
What made him want to branch into the sports world? I mean, he starts with Lexingate creating parts for Toyota, right?
Yeah.
And then branches into getting the Jaguars, now Fulham FC, you've got the Premier League, and now you've got AEW. What kind of spark that of like, I want to invest my money in this and start really focusing in this area?
My whole life, my dad always wanted to own a football team, an NFL team. And he always said that's the great asset. The NFL is the greatest league.
That's when you know you've really made it, right?
I think so. And he always wanted to do it. And it was, that was his dream. And he worked for years for,
you know, probably close. I mean, he worked so long to accumulate wealth, but then he worked a long time to figure out how you buy an NFL team, who you work with. And he came pretty close to buying the Rams. It's in the eye of the beholder how close he really came. But he had an agreement to buy 60% of the Rams. And the current owner, Mr. Kroenke, who owns the Rams right now, he owned 40%, and he had the right to match and buy the other 60%. But he had never done it before. And so Dad bought the 60% on paper, which triggered the matching rights. And he, you know, at the end of the window, he exercised them, and he did end up now owning 100% of the Rams, which was actually kind of a local team for us, because Champaign is sort of in between this triangle of St. Louis, Indianapolis, and Chicago. And St. Louis is close to a lot of people in Champaign Tarts, and I've spent a lot of time there. So it would have been cool. But then it worked out amazingly, and I wouldn't ever change a thing, because you look at where we're at now with the Jaguars here and also AEW being run out of Jacksonville and having this great fan base and this great place where we're able to safely run these shows outdoors, even in the winter. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a great venue. I love that venue. It's really, especially the last time I was there and like the sunset's coming down. It's a hell of an ambiance.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, you know, you have a good excuse why you're not here right now. So we miss you.
That's true. That's true. I'll be back. I'll be back with a kid in tow next time, 100%.
I'm excited for that. I will have, hopefully.
Wouldn't that it'll be crazy?
Yeah, I can't wait to meet this kid.
And then Brandy and Cody will be just like a month behind us. So we'll have to set up like some kind of a playpen back there or something. I don't know.
This is our developmental plan. Developmental program is you guys just keep having babies.
Just keep procreating. Well, listen, Tony, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me and chat and be so open and spill the beans on so much cool wrestling stuff and about your family and growing up and everything. So it's been a blast to get to see you and catch up with you. And hopefully I'll get to see you in person soon.
The pleasure is mine. It's been way too long. We've really missed you. And like I said, there's been a very valid reason why you haven't been around recently. But this is selfishly for me. I was just really excited to see you and catch up. So this is a rare pleasure. And honestly, the pleasure was all mine. It's great to see you.
Oh, thanks so much. And congratulations with everything going on with you. You're a very busy man. So maybe you'll go take a nap or something now or no. Rest or move into your new place. Go move.
I will. Thank you.
Loved this chit chat with Tony. I feel like there's so much stuff that we didn't even get to air in here because we were chatting for so long. I had a blast talking to him. I hope you guys really enjoyed listening to this conversation. I love that Tony was so candid and open, and he's such a smart dude. You know, like I feel like when someone asks me a question and I've got like a long answer to it, I start talking and then I forget what I'm talking about and can't really bring it around. Tony, like, he hits all of his points. He remembers everything. He's on a whole other level. I'm also a dumbass, but he's very smart. As we all know, I mean, look at the success, the resume, the business AQ mall. Did I say that right? Anyways, that was a blast. We've got some great episodes lined up for you guys coming up in the next few weeks. So hold on to your butts. They're coming in hot. You guys are going to love it. Guys, this episode of Oral Sessions is sponsored by Apostrophe, a prescription skincare company for people that are ready to take their acne seriously. Prescription acne treatment really works. However, it's hard to get. You've got to take time off work to go see a doctor, sit in line at the pharmacy, all for your medications. That is all, ladies and gentlemen, until Apostrophe. Apostrophe makes it easy to see a board-certified dermatologist online. You'll get treated immediately and your medications are delivered right to your home. Simply fill out Apostrophe's online questionnaire about your skin concerns and your medical history. Then you just got to snap a few selfies and your dermatologist will get back to you with a customized treatment plan tailored just for you. And the best part is that Apostrophe actually offers topical and oral medications so that you can treat your acne from the inside out and the outside. And we are targeting this acne from all over, left, right, and center, inside, outside. Apostrophe also treats, so they treat acne, but they can also help you with other skincare goals such as reducing redness, wrinkles, and even dark spots, which again, that's been a lifesaver for me during this time with a pregnancy skin. Who knows what's going on with my skin these days, but Apostrophe has been a huge help. So yeah, I mean, just a service experience in general was great. I mean, it's so amazing to know that I had a real dermatologist and that I had a plan that was tailored specifically to me. Fantastic. And what was good too is I actually had a little check mark on there that I could put that I was pregnant for this because a lot of times when you're pregnant, you can't use all the same skincare stuff. You got to be careful about everything you put in your body and on your body, all that stuff. So really cool to know that I had an actual dermatologist on the other end of the questionnaire, which took 2 seconds, by the way. Yeah, submitting your visit, it was just, it's so, so easy. It takes 2 seconds. You just log on, fill out the questionnaire, get it back, send those photos. It honestly took me less than 5 minutes. And then you get the prescription medication right to your door. So for you guys to get $15 off your first visit with a board certified dermatologist at apostrophe.com/Renee and use the code Renee. This code is only available to our listeners, just for you guys. We want everyone to have beautiful skin. So to get you guys started, just go to apostrophe.com/Renee and click begin visit. Then use the code Renee at your sign up and you're going to get $15 off your dermatology visit. That's apostrophe.com/Renee, R-E-N-E-E. And make sure to use that code Renee so you guys can get your dermatology visit for $15 off. So big thank you to Apostrophe for sponsoring this episode of Oral Sessions. I'll see you guys next week because, oh, we got a good guest. Was that a little bit of a teaser? Did I do it right? Tune in next week. Bye-bye.